Welcome to Church Ahead, the weekly Christian podcast talking about big questions facing the future of church with Rev L, all the way from the north of England.
Episode 76, Audacious Pentecostal, was the first and possibly most important stop on our church crawl on the 25th of June 2023. Keir Starmer, leader of the Labour Party, was at Audacious just a couple of months before us, and he got into trouble. Important national organisations such as the Labour Party and Church Ahead have to be careful about our implied endorsement. And having visited myself, I can see how easily he was wrong-footed. Here is a church that not only talks the usual Christian talk about helping the needy, but actually does a great deal to help poor people on a scale that leaves most churches standing, and that seems so up-to-date and comfortable with contemporary culture. So you can probably guess the issue that tripped up the usually careful, well-briefed party leader. When you see a church so thoroughly modern in so many ways, you might not think to look out for a Stone Age approach to something really quite important. Although they don't publicise it as energetically as their good work in Feeding the Hungry of Salford, they take a dim view of homosexuality. When they realised this, the Labour Party were pretty embarrassed to have their leader there. The video showing Keir Starmer interviewing the Audacious staff was promptly taken down. So I don't think Sir Keir would rush back to Audacious, and neither would I. I couldn't cope with the loud, noisy music, 2 hours in a dark warehouse, picking at the Bible rather than reading it and studying it properly. And I can't endorse their teaching on sexuality. I'm told that when one of their members comes out as gay, they are asked to leave the church. Oh dear, I don't like that. If you've forgotten Church Ahead view on sexuality, then please dig out episodes 26 to 29 from October 2022. As far as the Church of England's General Synod is concerned, it seems we called it right. So will Audacious limp along to closure without the endorsement from Labour's leader and Revel? Not exactly. This is one of the biggest churches in Manchester, and it's part of one of the most successful religious movements in the world. If any fair-minded Christians from the second or third stop on my June 2023 church crawl saw this church with their own eyes, I think their first reaction would be shock. But soon enough, they'd be amazed to see so many things done really well. Yes, if you're used to normal church, their excellence really is quite audacious. Five things they do startlingly well. Number one, they have a very strong bridge. Their language and beliefs are very much New Testament early church. The Holy Spirit comes, the apostles are sent, the lost are saved. And all this lands onto the struggling streets of Salford, where people worry about money and housing and addiction, including very ordinary domestic relationships, like parents trying to get stroppy teenagers off their phones. There's not much history in between, but this church lives very much in the first century and the 21st century. Second thing they do really well is scale. So many churches are an awkward size for fringe people or self-conscious young adults. 400 to 500 feels like an occasion, and it does not feel embarrassing. But they combine this with home group networks in the towns all around. Very clever. Number three, they are brilliant with digital media. Forget church notices coming from a grumpy church warden struggling bits of dog-eared paper. ATV, that's Audacious Television, advertises events in professionally produced videos, and the camera angles and production standards of their live streams are in a class of their own. They make most churches seem very amateur. Number four, their pastoral tone is pitch perfect. There's lots of challenge to stretch you. Believe this, donate to that, go and save the world there. But this is combined with frank and honest realism about human weakness. One last point. This is an outgoing church working hard to reach out, and they take care of their own in tight-knit groups. To put it in ecclesiastical jargon, they are both evangelistic and pastoral. I think they do all of those five things extremely well. But you've probably got to see it with your own eyes to grasp how much better it is than normal church. It feels a bit like watching non-league football at Bury or Rochdale, and then walking into City or United. It's just on a completely different level. Now, any arrogant Mancunian knows audacious is good because it's Mancunian. From the Industrial Revolution to the Smiths and Oasis, everything good started in Manchester. We are not backwards in boasting about our originality and greatness. But no, there is nothing uniquely Manchester here. This church is typical of 21st century Pentecostalism. It's part of the Assemblies of God denomination, but they don't call themselves anything so prosaic as AOG today. This is one of the few growing church groups in this country, and they're part of a massive global wave of Pentecostal churches that have overtaken the Roman Catholic Church in even traditionally Catholic countries like Brazil. I've been reading Ellie Hardy's book, Beyond Belief, How Pentecostal Christianity is Taking Over the World. Ellie is an Australian journalist who charts the growth of the movement from its first stirrings in 1906 Los Angeles to a network of its own big, big churches, turbocharged in the age of social media by their own celebrity preacher brands with global followings. About a quarter of the world's 2 billion Christians today are Pentecostal and rising. Here's the thing that should sober any church leader trying to compete or keep up. Audacious is not an exceptional Pentecostal church. It's fairly ordinary. It's unexceptional. Pentecostals in the megachurch capital of Sale would think Audacious a rather smallish church. She claims that in many countries, the votes of Pentecostals are critical to politicians holding power. They're one of Donald Trump's most important support groups. Ellie sees three keys to their success. Number one, they are genuinely bottom-up. Poor people often shape their worship and practice, and the leaders have to catch this wave. Far cry from Pope tells the bishop, tells the priest, tells the layman. Their activities evolve in response to the experience of very ordinary people. My sense of the people I saw at Audacious is that they were from lower to middle income groups. And every detail of the culture, from the fizzy drinks in cooled fridges and proper coffee machines to the biscuits in the welcome bags, everything unashamedly reflects the way ordinary people like to do things. Second, she says they're really dancing with 21st century media. Perhaps the Church of England with its Book of Common Prayer and Bible reading was a response to the printing press. Surely the internet's going to change church like every previous innovation in communication. This lot are embracing digital communication like ducks to water. And no, they're not neglecting the face-to-face of the real world. They take the physical gathering and they enhance it with technology. The third thing Ellie stresses is they build their church through good works. Just listen to the weekly cycle of activity for homeless people at Audacious. Monday evening, street team in Manchester. Tuesday evening, drop-in. Tuesday evening, street team in Stockport. Thursday morning, drop-in in Manchester. Thursday evening, street team in Manchester. Friday morning, drop-in in Bury. Friday evening, street team in Manchester. Saturday evening, street team in Manchester. Could you keep up with that? Just the list exhausts me. If you can find the video Labour no longer want you to see, you'll see Keir Starmer leading them in a round table meeting with some of their staff, listing all the projects for poor people. That's why he was there. Ellie Hardy has found that in South Africa, the Pentecostals provide healthcare and welfare on a bigger scale than the state. And there are plenty of places around the world where the church is doing more for society's basic physical needs than government, which of course would have been the case in this country not many centuries ago. But that's what the Pentecostals are doing today. Now, Ellie's a journalist, but I think she's got under the skin of their evolving theology pretty well. Like the early church, the Pentecostals have always taught more than, let's say, Anglicans and Catholics about Jesus' return. But they've moved on from their premillennialism, the idea that Jesus comes back and then the key thousand years get going, to a new emphasis on post-millennialism. The idea that we build the kingdom now on earth, we get the party going, and then Jesus comes back. So no longer are they sitting around waiting for the apocalypse. They are actively trying to create the conditions in every aspect of society. Now, I don't believe in any literal millennium. But for the more literal-minded brothers and sisters, that's the theological recipe for a church busy, 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 doing genuinely good works today. Now, of course, they're criticised for ulterior motives and exploiting the vulnerable. If you look at the detail, you might well find things to question. But the point is this: they do enough good on enough scale for enough people to notice and then say, here is a church I can believe in. Last piece of the audacious jigsaw: the preaching. I watched their service online for Remembrance Sunday. The preacher was a woman in her 30s, I would guess. She introduced herself as a mum. Her biker's leather jacket and ripped jeans were not well chosen to put me at ease. Her manner was very confident, with the handheld mic, lots of movement. Her theme was waiting on God. I waited in vain for the ironic reference to Samuel Beckett's Waiting for Godot.
Shut up, Revel. You're an intellectual snob.
She talked about Jesus telling us to go and how we often waste our time waiting. She began with a story about waiting for her mum to come home because she'd lost her house keys, or thought she had. But when the mother arrived, her teenage self throws the coat down on the floor in protest about how long the mum's kept her waiting, and what should fall out of the coat pocket but the keys. It was a brilliant story, and she performed it as much as she told it. After about 20 minutes, the talk morphed into a time of cooling down the spirit, with the band playing softly to help the mood. Yes, this was good preaching. Clear, memorable, biblical, challenging, inspiring, credible, and well done in a very 21st century way. I could imagine punters there in their 20s looking back at my age on this with the fondness I look back on John Stott. Yes, I am an intellectual snob, and I can imagine many Christians who find the type of preaching I like a bit too intellectual would lap this up. So it seems this church is thriving without the endorsement of Keir Starmer. Could you cope with audacious? I couldn't cope with it at my age. But at 14, when I thought the Church of England was too boring, yes, I think I might have given it a go, as it seems to be winning rather a lot of young people today. But I suppose with this caveat: I would have loved this church in my mid-teens, but I suspect the day of growing out of it would come soon enough. Of the three churches on my church crawl, the most visibly successful is the one that appeals least to me. Give me the beauty of Manchester Cathedral or Roman Catholic worship. But how many Mancunians would prefer stained glass windows to the spotlit stage performance at Audacious? 10%? More like 1% would be my guess. Before 1689, the Church of England was the only game in town. There was no competition, not in the open anyway. But the Toleration Act opened up the competition from both sides. The Church of England was more worried about the strength of competition from the Catholic side. The Protestant dissenters seemed small and insignificant. Many Protestant denominations are fading today, but not the Pentecostals. They've toned down some of their awkward theological eccentricity and really picked up the flow of 21st century culture. They are booming all over the world. During my lifetime, they have evolved into one of the most important Christian groups. On my church crawl, I was shocked by how strong Audacious felt and how weak the Church of England felt. Put simply, the Church of England is where young people don't go to church, and Audacious, warts and all, is where they do. Okay, that's a slight exaggeration. I honestly can't make up my mind about this church. I was thinking about my experience of Audacious, listening to architectural historian Dr. Elizabeth Lev, commentary on the first Christian church buildings in Rome on a recent Spectator podcast. The Christians wanted their churches to look very unlike the pagan temples. Now, the temples were quite dark, so the Christians went for churches with lots of windows and light to dramatise the light of Christ. So on this one, Audacious has gone the other way. But they have followed those early Roman Christians in a different way. The light-filled basilica where Christians worshipped was supposed to look like an ordinary secular building, where non-Christians could be invited without feeling uncomfortable. And the nightclub warehouse probably does put a lot of non-church people at ease. Dr. Lev said the churches were deliberately capacious and contemporary. They were designed to say, everyone welcome. Audacious is welcoming all right. But I'm just not sure where the spiritual light is and where is the darkness. Thank you for listening to episode 76. Next week, the final reflection on our church crawl as we look at ethnicity.